And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal, the full story, the whole enchilada, the Lance Roberts Show. It's money, markets, life. Now, it's the Lance Roberts Show.
And welcome this morning to the Tuesday edition. It's the pre-hump day edition of Lance Roberts Show. Rich, you having some problems over there this morning?
You know, every morning the switcher wants to freeze up over here.
It's not awake yet.
Something. I get you all set up.
Right.
And I push the one button to bring you on. No.
Oh, wait, question. Is it a red button?
No, it's not a red button.
See, there's the problem right there.
It's actually a stinking mouse.
It should be the big red button.
Yeah. Right? That was easy.
There you go. All right, a couple of things. It is Tuesday, of course. It is the as we get ready to move further into the week. And talk a little bit today about the markets. You know, it's interesting right now because, you know, they're showing up on CNBC as we're talking about right now. In our studio, we have several monitors. And so up on CNBC right now, they're showing Google Trends relating to two terms, right? The yield curve and recession. And this has been something that nobody's really talked about over the course of the last 5 years. You know, the potential for a recession was not something the media would even talk about. And of course, this has been all over the news over the last week because of the inversion of the yield curve. And now all of a sudden, these are the main talking points, right? You know, when CNBC runs a headline that says markets in turmoil, you know pretty much that this is a crisis moment for the media, right? And this is what we saw last week. The yield curve inverted, market in turmoil banner came up, and of course, markets were selling off 400 or 500 points, and all of this was on the back of this yield curve inversion. Talking about the potential now for a recession is really picked up, and they're surprised now that there's been a massive pickup in people searching about recessions and yield curves. Like, how many people understand what a yield curve is anyway? So, is that a left curve or a right curve? I'm not quite sure. But yeah, I mean, these are things that people don't understand. So of course they go to Google them. You know, but the issue is simply this: is that, you know, recessions tend to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, and this is one of the big issues: is that when the term recession and yield curve starts to become mainstream and everybody's talking about it, well, this is where people make decisions to basically, well, maybe I won't go out to eat tonight. Maybe I'll postpone buying that new car I was thinking about. You know, maybe I'll just save a little extra money this month rather than spending. You know, it's those small, minute adjustments that people make that actually impede economic growth and then lead you to a recession. And recessions aren't a bad thing. And this is the interesting part because, you know, recessions are actually healthy for an economy, because what that allows for is for the economy to kind of reset itself to, you know, build up some pent-up demand, and so that you can have the next growth cycle in the economy. You know, we're petrified of having a recession because, well, two reasons. One, psychologically, we remember the last one still. And for a lot of people, that was a very painful experience back in 2008. They lost their, you know, lost their house, they lost their jobs. I mean, you know, they lost money. And so people remember that pain, that agony of the recession. So we certainly don't want to go through that again. But on the other hand, having kind of unbridled expansions as well, where people are leveraging up a tremendous amount of debt, we're starting to build some imbalances in the system. We're starting to have unhealthy debt structures within the overall economy. Not having a recession and trying to postpone those recessionary environments tends to lead to bigger problems down the road. So rather than having just, you know, maybe more, you know, mild recessions a little bit more often, and not talking about, you know, a crash type recession, but just an economic slowdown allows the markets to reset, being a healthy part of the overall market cycle and environment, we tend to build up these financial bubbles because we don't want to have the recession, and then that just leads to a bigger problem when the recession eventually occurs. You know, we figured out all kinds of things to do in the economy about how to pull forward consumption, how to use debt to extend cycles. What we haven't figured out how to do yet is to actually repeal recessionary environments. And so we've now blown this problem within the overall economy of a massive debt level. We've talked about the reason why interest rates can't go up, because if they do, it challenges that debt structure that currently overlays the economy. We talked a little bit yesterday in particular about the energy sector because of what's happening there as well. We're already starting to see a pickup in bankruptcies. A lot of these companies went out, they borrowed debt on hopes that they could go use that debt to drill wells, turn a profit, and then repay that debt. Unfortunately, oil prices never really rose enough to make those wells profitable. So this has now become a problem for some of these smaller players, and that's beginning to spread through the industry. So, you know, these are the problems that occur late in a cycle, and this is what ultimately kind of impedes the markets as well as the economy at some point. So it's important to try to understand this. And again, you know, you don't want to be scared into making decisions because of what's running on a headline, but it's important to understand the risk of what's happening with the economy, because again, it's not just about, you know, what your money is in your 401k plan or what's in your stock portfolio, but it's also about your job. Jobs become under stress when you have a recession, right? The companies begin to curtail employment. They begin to lay off workers. They're trying to protect their profit margins as well. So, you know, jobs become at risk, of course, which leads to, you know, family being at risk. So this is why we always talk about the importance of making sure you understand what the risks are, because it's not just about the stock market. It's about everything that follows along with that and with respect to our life, our jobs, our family, our money, our health. All those things are affected. You know, during the financial crisis, a lot of people's health became materially disrupted because of the stress that was occurring during the financial crisis. So those things happen, and this is why it's important to prepare for them and understand them. Don't fear them. You know, that's the whole problem, right? The way the media spins this out is like, oh my God, this is something we've got to be terrified of. You know, a recession is terrible. No, don't be afraid of them. Just understand what the risks are and prepare accordingly. We're 10 years into a bull market cycle. These are things that happen, and this is why we want to be careful of it. Now, what we're going to talk about today a little bit is this rally that we've had here over the last couple of days in particular. The market's rattling right back up into the 50-day moving average. Again, no big deal there, except for the fact that we are still within a very defined process that is suggestive that the economy and the markets are actually a lot weaker than what headlines suggest. So we're talking about that a little bit more today, but we actually have the article out this morning on our website, realinvestmentadvice.com. And it's called Technically Speaking, This is Still a Sellable Rally. We still suggest taking some risk off the table, raising a little bit of cash, being a little bit more defensive here, because that's what's playing in the markets as well right now. So be right back after the break. I'm your host, Lance Roberts, right here for realinvestmentadvice.com. Don't go away. Trying to make ends meet, you're a slave to the money and you die.
Lance Roberts Blog. It's required reading for the informed investor. Catch it today on LanceRobertsShow.com.
Speaking of how money works and how to make the most out of Social Security, we do lunch and learns here at our office. And on September 4th, that's the Wednesday at 12 o'clock, we're doing Social Security basic rules and claiming strategies. This is one of the more seminal, basic, but important lunch and learns, because all we focus on are those basic rules and claiming strategies for Social Security. So if you're thinking about taking Social Security or you're a couple of years away, whatever it is, we provide lunch. Just go to realinvestmentadvice.com, check out the events calendar, and sign up.
Everybody get up.
And so this morning, markets are looking to open just a smidge weaker yesterday, today. A couple of things there. You know, we're still in this kind of back and forth with China, talking about currency devaluation, and you know that's a whole interesting thing, right? Is you know, we talk about China's like, China's a currency manipulator. We actually labeled China a currency manipulator. The Treasury did. The United States has been manipulating their currency for about 140 years. So, you know, this is not a new thing. In fact, every country manipulates their currency to some degree or the other, because it's what helps stabilize trade between countries. If your currency becomes dramatically stronger, It gives you a disadvantage on imports into your country because you wind up paying more for stuff. So every country to some degree manipulates their currency to keep trade somewhat stable, right? You want to have the best economic environment, you know, for your own country. And of course, money never leaves borders. And this is something that a lot of people understand. They assume that, you know, when I buy something from China, that I send my U.S. dollars to China and then they have dollars, right? That doesn't happen. Money never actually leaves the borders of the United States. When China is paid for goods and services that we buy from them, they have a choice. They can either take the currency in and convert it to yuan, or they can sanitize that trade by buying U.S. treasuries. And this is why China owns, you know, $1 trillion worth of treasuries. Japan, oh, by the way, Japan is now the largest owner of U.S. treasuries. Yes, they have now surpassed Japan, China. There's nothing wrong with that. This is how trade works. And this is an important thing to understand about trade and what happens. Because we all want cheaper products, right? We don't want to pay more for stuff, right? We already have a finite budget we're living on. So if the cost of a television or something that we want to buy goes up in value, then we have to start making choices, trade-offs about what we buy. And we also get psychologically used to certain prices. Let's say that you've been shopping online for a flat-screen television. So you're looking around and you're viewing different televisions and ranges that you want. And here, let's just do this. I'm going to run over to Amazon.com real quick, and we'll just look for a flat-screen TV. Right, and we'll just take a look at some prices here. So I can get a 55-inch 4K Ultra HD Roku Smart Television for $379.
Amazing.
It's amazing. Now, that 55-inch television, by the way, a couple of years ago, cost you well over $1,500, right? So prices have come down dramatically. But, yeah, $379. You know why televisions are so cheap, by the way?
Why is that?
Because they're smart now, which means they have internet access. So what these companies do is they now sell you the flat screen television basically at their cost, and then they collect the data, then they sell the data for profit. See?
And you're going to have TV pop-ups on your screen all day long.
It's coming.
Thanks to that search right there.
It's coming. But here's the point. I can buy this television at $379. So I'm thinking about this, right? This is how it works psychologically. So I'm sitting around the house and I'm thinking about adding this 55-inch television to my living room so I can watch football. Russell. Russell's probably got like an 85-inch television in his living room.
Not quite.
You know how much an 85-inch television goes for?
We're not probably $600-$700.
I wouldn't doubt it. No, it's probably a little over 1,000. I can get you 100-inch diagonal for what, $1,800? Wow.
Really?
Yeah. We're gonna have to boost Russell's up. Yeah.
Is that one of those like HDK of TVs or whatever those are called these days?
Yeah, that's HD smart, does everything for you. So here's a 75-inch 4K UHD television. $1,400. So that's cheap.
Yeah.
But let's say Russell's sitting around and he's thinking about buying this television, right?
It's cheaper than painting the wall.
It's like, you got to spot a wall, stick a TV up, cheaper.
Yeah. We'll just cover that hole up.
But you're sitting around, you're thinking about buying this television, and all of a sudden you see the price jump up to $500. You go, well, that TV was just $379 a couple of weeks ago. I think I'll just wait and see if it goes on sale or if the price comes back down. So part of this that we're talking about here is simply psychology about how consumers buy things. We get used to a certain price. And this is the same thing about mortgages, right? Interest rates go up on a mortgage. People don't run out to buy a mortgage. They go, well, A, I can't afford the price of the mortgage now because the monthly payments are higher than they were before. And I can't afford that in my budget. Or what most people do is they'll say, well, you know, I'm not in a tremendous hurry to go buy a new house. I'll just wait and see if rates come back down again. And so what this does is this affects the economy and how we run. So this is why countries, quote unquote, manipulate. And the reason I put my quote fingers up is because we talk about manipulating currency. And what we're doing is we're balancing those structures for trade so that consumption remains strong within each country. Every country has its own bias towards itself, right? It wants to all have, an economic positive. And so every country in the world manipulates currency to some degrees. Well, so and the reason is just keep trade stable. So just recently here, the U.S. has labeled China a currency manipulator because they're trying to peg their currency at a level relative to the U.S. dollar for two reasons for them. One is to stabilize the trade balances back and forth so that the currency transactions are still profitable for them, right? Because they do want these, they do want an advantage. There's no doubt about that. Everybody does. The second thing is they have a lot of currency outflows right now. When currency's leaving the country and going to other areas, and this is and part and parcel of this is what's happening with our U.S. Treasury right now. Why are yields plunging on the U.S. Treasury? We talked yesterday with Grant Williams about this. We've got a great podcast coming out next week with Grant Williams on our website. The 10-year Treasury yield, right, what the 10-year Treasury note yields has dropped markedly just over the last few months. And this is what's led to this inverted yield curve. And everybody's freaking about, on television because it is historically a very good precursor to recessionary onsets. Why is that? What does the yield curve have to do with that? When yield differentials get very, very compressed, it's no longer profitable for companies to go out and borrow money to build things, right? Capital investment. So it impacts the economy. Hiring, those other things come under pressure as well. So that's why historically when you see these compressed yield curves or inverted yield curves, they have been precursors to the onsets of recession. But the reason that the yield curve is dropping is because the yield on the 10-year Treasury was about 2%. Now, you go, well, that's not very much money for 10 years. True, but $15 trillion worth of debt elsewhere in the world now has a negative yield to it. So money's leaving other countries to come to the United States to buy treasuries at a 2% yield. This is why Japan is now the world's largest owner of U.S. treasuries, because they're sheltering foreign reserves in U.S. treasuries to get the yield, right? They want more return on their money, just like everybody else's. You want more return on your money? So do they. So they shelter foreign reserves in higher yielding bonds. And in order to do that, you've also got to have a very safe, secure bond to do that with. And that's the U.S. Treasury. I mean, you get a much higher yield in Zimbabwe, right? Or Venezuela. You get a lot higher yield there on government bonds in Venezuela, just not sure you want to store your foreign currency there. So it comes to the U.S. And so when you have these massive outflows that are coming into the U.S. to shelter inside the U.S. Treasury, it drives our yields down, but it also begins to affect these currency balances. So you're seeing a lot of that going on right now. There's a lot of currency flight coming out of China. Their economy is under pressure. And so money's leaving for safety, security, and yield, which there's only one place to go in the world right now, and that is the U.S. So it's important to understand, the reason I'm going into this is that it's important to understand that these currency transactions and what's happening, and while we're quick to jump out there and label somebody a currency manipulator, there's more to the story than just them sitting around going, I think I'm just going to lower the currency just to, I'm going to get those Americans. I'm going to lower my currency value. There's some truth to that story because they are fighting back against tariffs. Tariffs are impacting their country. It is impeding their economic growth. And so they are using currency changes, to try to balance off that risk, right? And if we were being attacked the same way, guess what we would do? We would do exactly the same thing. And this is kind of some of the irony. Judy Shelton, who is one of the potential Fed nominees, she made a lot of statements. They're like, we need to lower our interest rates to zero because everybody else is doing it, so we need to do it too. And they're doing it to get an unfair advantage, so we need to do it too. you know, it, you know, it's kind of like calling the pot the kettle black, right? And, you know, it's just there. You have to understand why we do these things. And a lot of these things are very, you know, kind of esoteric issues. We don't talk about them a lot. They're not taught in school. And so we kind of take the headlines and we go with it and we say, oh, well, if it's reported on the news, that must be the truth. Well, it's important to understand, particularly if you have money invested in the markets or you have a job, is to understand how these things actually work, because it does have an impact ultimately to the shape and structure of the economy. And we're seeing that occur now. And that's one of the big risks we've got going on. That's why the yield curve is now becoming inverted, because of these distortions between trade and between economies. And this is why this is accelerated really just since the middle of 2018. Be right back after the break.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for Lance's newsletter now at LanceRobertsShow.com.
Speaking of how money works and how to make the most out of Social Security, we do lunch and learns here at our office. And on September 4th, that's the Wednesday at 12 o'clock, we're doing Social Security basic rules and claiming strategies. This is one of the more seminal, basic, but important lunch and learns, because all we focus on are those basic rules and claiming strategies for Social Security. So if you're thinking about taking Social Security or you're a couple of years away, whatever it is, we provide lunch. Just go to realinvestmentadvice.com, check out the events calendar, and sign up.
Welcome back to the show. It's 6:34. Russell, I found you an 82-inch flat-screen television for $1,900.
Nice.
At Amazon. They'll deliver it tomorrow. Just make a space on your wall.
Yeah. What time will you be home?
Exactly. Brent bought it for you.
With Connie's card.
Oh, he'll appreciate that.
Yeah.
By the way, the interesting statistic Brent gave me this morning, I didn't know this. By the end of 1992, there were only 10 websites online.
Yeah.
No, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
It's just, you know, I remember when so my first computer was a Commodore 64.
Mm-hmm.
People don't remember that one. It's what I learned to program on, basic back then. But then my first computer, right, MS-DOS, was the Tandy 1000.
Oh, yeah.
By Radio Shack,
mm-hmm.
right? Had dual 5 1/4-inch floppy drives. And when the first hard drive came out, it was a 10-megabyte hard drive. People were like, oh, you'll never use that much storage. you know, the memory was like 512K, right? It was basically, you have handheld calculators more powerful today than those computers were back then.
It ran at about, 500 cycles?
Yeah, maybe. And maybe. And, of course, you know, you go online to the internet, it was basically bulletin boards. There was no websites. And, of course, you know, AOL came along, mm-hmm. and that was kind of the first, you know, big thing. Yeah, remember all that? Yeah, you've got, wow. So today there's 1.71 billion websites in the world.
Really?
Yeah. Probably a billion of those are porn sites, but 1.71 billion websites are now in the world.
Well, the reality of some of that is, too, that those porn websites are the reason that the internet has expanded and had been developed with speeds and clarity, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff.
Hey, you know, don't knock the industry. A lot of your technology you have online today, online video streaming, mm-hmm. a lot of that, Blu-ray, the Blu-ray disc
format.
War, right?
Yeah.
Format
yeah.
was won through the porn industry.
Really?
Because that was the whole, when there was, and you remember the whole VHS Betamax?
Yes.
Another issue.
Uh-huh.
Because they had to deliver that product, mm-hmm. and so there's a demand for that, and you know a lot of the technology innovation has really been pushed forward by the very dark side of the internet nobody wants to talk about. But
supply and demand.
Yeah, but a lot of the online purchasing systems, mm-hmm. a lot of that were developed for specific purposes because they needed to be able to do it.
Yeah.
But no, it's just interesting. You think about 1.71 billion websites. There's only 7 billion people in the world. So about every seventh person has a website.
So somebody's got a lot of tabs open somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, I mean, it's like you meet seven people and ask them, how many of you have a website? One of the seven is going to have a website.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, for sure.
Just saying.
True.
I've got a domain I don't even use. I just bought it to protect myself.
I know, right? Well, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is
I bought my son's, too, just to protect him.
Just in case.
Yeah.
It is. No, it is. And you have to be quick about it. I mean, people have gone out and just registered websites. Mm-hmm. If you want to go get a letter of the alphabet, like A.com, it's somebody owns it.
Well, what was the university that was trying to trademark the...
Was that Ohio? Ohio.
Yeah.
Wants to trademark the word the.
The.
We need to completely rethink this whole trademarking issue. Not that you shouldn't do it.
Right.
But, you know, people are really getting kind of
ridiculous.
Ridiculous about it. Yeah. And this.
We should trademark that one.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.com.
It's already out there.
I'm sure it is.
Good. No, they have a show. Ridiculousness.
Really?
Yes. Oh, you've never seen this on cable?
I have not seen that, no.
Russell, have you seen Ridiculousness on cable?
I haven't.
You haven't?
No, I have not.
Hold on a second. I've got to look up the guy's name. I can't think of the guy's. I'm drawing a blank at the moment about
Russell's cable system probably has it blocked, like his sports channel that he wants, right?
Okay. No, this guy is
hosed on NFL Network right now.
Rob Didrick.
Really?
Right. He used to be a skateboarder.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And he had this show for a while, Something Factory, and then basically it was him and this girl and this other guy, and they just did stupid stuff inside this warehouse, right?
Yeah.
And it became a show, and it really well. Now he runs a whole show called Ridiculousness, which is all they do is pull videos, stupid people videos mm-hmm. off YouTube, and then play them and talk about them.
Wonder how much of that stuff comes from C-SPAN.
Probably a good bit of it, but they'll literally on, I think it's on MTV maybe. Yeah, it's on MTV.
Well, that makes sense.
And they'll literally run this show for 24 hours in a row.
Well, talk about just a company that revolutionized things, MTV, and how we digest music.
Exactly. And what happened to that? I remember when MTV first aired, I was in college,
mm-hmm.
and I saw the very first video ever played on MTV.
Yeah.
Right? And now they don't play music videos anymore at all.
Oh, it's reality shows and garbage.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but that changed the whole idea about how we consume. You know, the music video changed the whole music industry.
I was working at an album rock station in Tulsa. And I remember the program director talking about MTV and how it was going to influence how people listen to music. Mm-hmm. And we began to program that radio station based on, in part, what MTV was playing that week.
Really?
Because people would hear the song on the radio, and they would remember what they had seen on the video, and it was self-reinforcing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So explain to me this, since you used to work on programming side, why is it that with all of the thousands and millions of great pieces of music out there, why is it that radio stations play the same 10 songs all day long?
Lazy. It is.
That's it?
It's corporate programming from someplace not around here, and they all have the same cookie-cutter format.
Ah.
Russell's station, KSEV, is one of the few independent radio stations left in America who does it their own way.
Interesting. Everything's been just gobbled up by Clear Channel now?
Pretty much. Yeah, the three companies.
Wow. Interesting. See? I learned something new today.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to flip the switch here.
So anyway, 1.71 billion websites. So if you've got a website out there, congratulations, you're part of the 1.71 billion. You know, we talked about, you know, one of the issues that is coming to America, and it's just a function of time, is that, you know, credit scores and the ability to understand people's dynamics in terms of consumption abilities, et cetera, are going to change the dynamics of how we measure things. You know, it's interesting right now that, you know, we have, you know, statistics that are released by the government, like retail sales data. And it's a guess at best at what happened with retail sales from one month to the next. However, a company like JP Morgan, as an example, JP Morgan Chase, they can tell you to the minute what people are spending on any type of goods or service through their credit card transaction data, credit and debit card transaction data. And that real-time input can tell you a lot about the dynamics of what people are doing within the economy. Also, measuring credit also has an issue of helping to tailor how things are sold, where things are focused, those type of issues. You know, this is one of the things that China has been doing as of late is they've, you know, if we take a look at our credit system within the U.S. economy, right, we have a tremendous number of people living paycheck to paycheck, a tremendous number of people that are, you know, in poor credit quality, and particularly since the financial crisis, a lot of that credit quality has not been repaired. You know, we have a lot of people that are having to basically try to buy cars and buy autos with, you know, 500 to 600 credit scores, those type of things. Well, in China, they basically shame you for having poor credit. And the communist Chinese government is now bragging about its new social credit system, which is preventing 2.5 million discredited entities from purchasing plane tickets and 90,000 people from buying high-speed train tickets in the month of July alone. China restricted 2.56 million discredited entities from doing these things. Chinese citizens are punished by having their social credit score lowered for engaging in a number of different behaviors, including bad driving, smoking on trains, buying too many video games, buying too much junk food, buying too much alcohol, calling a friend who has a low credit score, having a friend online who has a low credit score, posting fake news online, criticizing the government, visiting unauthorized websites, walking your dog without a leash, and letting your dog bark too much. So there you go. If you want to fix the problems in your neighborhood, start a social credit system where you live.
Man, that's a tough neighborhood.
I tell you what. But yeah, that's how you control the population right there. And you say you want to be like China. Nip. Be right back after the break. Don't go away. So tough.
Longer talk with Lance about your money? Request a personal one-on-one at LanceRobertsShow.com.
Speaking of how money works and how to make the most out of Social Security, we do lunch and learns here at our office. And on September 4th, that's the Wednesday, at 12 o'clock, we're doing Social Security Basic Rules and Claiming Strategies. This is one of the more seminal, basic, but important lunch and learns because all we focus on are those basic rules and claiming strategies for Social Security. So if you're thinking about taking Social Security or you're a couple of years away, whatever it is, we provide lunch. Just go to realinvestmentadvice.com, check out the events calendar, and sign up.
And welcome back to the show this morning. It is 6:47 on this Tuesday. All right, so we wasted a segment playing around.
It was very informative, I thought. If you're shopping for TVs.
Exactly, TVs and
porn.
No. No, that's not what we're talking about.
That's what my notes have right here.
Not shopping for it. We're just saying that's where a lot of the innovation came from.
Yes, yes, to clarify.
Jeez, Brent. You know, everybody's all up in arms, right? So especially if you listen to the Democratic debates right now, you know, they're all up in arms about climate change and how we need to, you know, if we don't do something about climate change, we're all going to be dead in 10 years.
Or 12.
Or 12, or yeah, whatever the number yeah. is. And look, I get it. And it's interesting because, so my wife sells, she's actually traveling today. She's up in Annapolis. And she sells autogas, which is basically liquefied propane to a big degree. And it's very clean. It's very energy efficient. They fuel up buses with them, and so they can drive buses on a more cost-effective basis. But it's a way to utilize a product that we already have a lot of, to do something that is economically and environmentally friendly. But that's not what we want to talk about. See, we want to do stuff that's really not been proven to be effective and actually produces a larger carbon footprint over time than actually using gas-powered vehicles, right? So this is when we start talking about electric vehicles and all this other stuff. But it's interesting that the one thing we should be paying attention to, we're not. And it is a much more immediate threat to the world than climate change. And that's the bee population. There have been massive reductions in the overall bee population around the world. And yet, you know, we can't figure out why, to a large degree. A report out today that 500,000 bees dropped dead in Brazil after they started increasing their pesticide use. That's not surprising. But there's also been a big drop in the bee population, really, in various parts of the entire world. And a little bit of it's confounding scientists. They can't really quite figure out why. But this is a much more immediate problem than climate change. And yet, I don't see anybody out having bee aid, right? We're not having, you know, live concerts to try to salvage the bee population.
Well,
but
it's not sexy.
It's not sexy, and it's not a big growth industry.
And people don't understand the vast implications of the bee population.
If you lose your bee population, there is no world, for the most part. Has everything to do with pollination and growth and just about every facet of production. But it's interesting because again, you know, it's and to Brent's point, see, saving the bees, which is what we should be concerned about right now, it's not a big high growth business, right? It's not something I can generate billions of dollars doing, and I can't, you know, get people to donate billions of dollars into a product that actually is not proven to work, Tesla. I didn't say that. I'm just teasing.
The inside voice and outside voice.
Exactly. There's a guy on CBC right now. Tesla has some self-inflicted wounds. You think?
he's not looking too good himself.
Yeah, he's not. So it's just interesting that, you know, we pick things. And remember this during the Obama administration, the whole Solyndra debacle, right? $500 billion. Went into Solyndra, disappeared, company went bankrupt. And this was all part and parcel of repaying a favor for an election, right? The guy that was running Solyndra was a big supporter of Barack Obama when he was running for president. You know, and the guy who becomes president, you know, mind you, is not somebody who, you know, just wakes up one day and throws her hat in the ring and says, I think I'm going to be president. There's a whole group, the guy that actually becomes president, there's a whole group of people behind them, the power behind the chair that dictates really to a large degree who is president and who is not. There's a very interesting show on, I think it's Showtime right now, called The Loudest Voice, which is about the rise and fall of Roger Ailes of Fox News. But there's an interesting byline to this from the fact that it shows that Roger Ailes basically picked Donald Trump to be president, and the putting of Fox News behind his election is what propelled him into the presidency. It's an interesting story. It's not very flattering the way it's written. And again, I don't know how much of it's true versus how much of it's Showtime, highlighting the negative spin on things. But it's not a very flattering show for Roger Ailes, I will tell you that. But if you can bypass the political commentary that's being thrown out there by Showtime and watch the development of how Fox News came to be, it's actually very interesting. But anyway, you know, this is the things that, you know, we miss, which is, you know, we get focused on things like, well, we need climate change. We have this climate change issue, and we've got to go all drive electric cars and kill our oil industry because, well, that's the thing to do to fight climate change. Now, you know, despite the fact that there's a tremendous amount of data that suggests that some of the narrative is not accurate. And also the fact that the coal industry provides a lot of that electricity to drive those cars.
Have you seen the picture of this roadside service car pulling a trailer? On the trailer is a generator, right?
Right.
And they've pulled up alongside an electric car that ran out of juice. And they're recharging.
There's a whole industry.
They're recharging that electric car with the diesel generator on the trailer, being towed by a gasoline-powered vehicle.
Well, you know, what could possibly go wrong?
Can't make these things up.
Now, that's a growth industry.
Yes.
But here's the point. And my point is this, is that, you know, be careful with a lot of the stuff that's run out in the media before you just wholesale buy into things like, oh, my God, the world's about to die because of climate change. You know, really study the data. You know, look at how the data is collected. And, you know, if you take a look at the climate change data, there's a lot of questions about how accurate that data actually is. And also what the actual contributor to the climate change is. And a lot of this is still speculative. A lot of it's theory. And I'm not saying, and look, I'm not arguing with you if you're a big climate change guy. I'm not arguing with you. I'm not saying it's right, it's wrong, and different. All I'm saying is that, you know, really understand the dynamics of what you're getting into and understand what the real crisis is. And the bee population is a real crisis. That is a real problem that we're not paying attention to and should be paying a lot more attention to that versus trying to, you know, kill an oil and gas industry for political reasons, right? Particularly when your job relies on it. And that's the kind of thing that fascinates me, right? We live in Houston, which is potentially, you know, Houston, Midland, Texas. I mean, Texas, right? I mean, we should be the most anti-electric cars of anybody on the planet. You know, because these are your jobs. You know, if there's a, I kid you not, my next door neighbor works for an oil and gas company, drives a Tesla. What are you thinking? You know, you're trying to put yourself out of a job.
You know what torques me off? And we've got this in the parking garage upstairs, too. Yeah. They have these reserved spaces for energy-efficient vehicles.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the guys that ought to be parking at the edge of the parking lot.
Yeah, because they
can
walk.
And let the cars that are more, are less efficient closer in because you don't have to drive them as far.
Yeah, I like this idea.
It's just completely backwards.
Yeah. But we're trying to encourage more people to do that so they can park closer.
And one day I parked my little two-seater four-cylinder engine car in one of those gas-efficient parking spots. I got a note on my windshield.
Right? That said you're not energy efficient?
No.
Your car uses maybe a pint of gas.
I get 30 freaking miles to the gallon out of that thing. You know?
Now, see, there's an interesting study, right? So your Mazda at 30 miles a gallon versus how much carbon footprint does it take to get a Tesla to do 30 miles?
Yeah.
Now, see, that would be an interesting study. So I will bet you that you throw off less of a carbon footprint, you know, with your Flintstone mobile than...
Well, it's been proven that the carbon footprint of a Hummer is less than that of a Prius. You work all the numbers from scratch to finish, and the Hummer is a smaller carbon footprint than a Prius.
Interesting. We obviously didn't have a lot to talk about today on the show.
Heads are exploding all over the town.
It's just one of those days where...
It's Tuesday.
There's not a lot going on today. Markets are going to open about flat today. We had a bit of a rally. We had a good rally yesterday on the back of news that, well, you know, ongoing trade deal, potentially going to get that done at some point. Trump backing off of the, you know, the trade kibosh on U.S. technology companies selling products to China. Of course, the delay of tariffs and also the Fed, the White House really kind of going after the Fed again to get them to lower rates and do more QE as if that is the cure for our ills, which, you know, obviously it isn't. It could very well try to extend the current environment a bit longer, but ultimately continues to build onto the issue of the debt problem that we have. And again, we're already starting to see the ramifications of that. So again, you know, markets are kind of open flat today. We're kind of hanging in there. This is still very much a sellable rally. And we did take some of our position off yesterday. We wrote about that today. It's on our website. So if you go to realinvestmentadvice.com, get our latest article. It's up this morning, technically speaking, why this is a sellable rally. And we've got a lot more stuff coming out this week. And then also make sure and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We've got a great interview with Grant Williams from Real Vision that we'll be doing next week. And we gave you a little snippet, just a snippet of it, talking about inverted yield curves and negative yields. That's on the website now under our 3 minutes on markets and money from yesterday. So we're going to leave that up today. But make sure you get by the website and get our latest article and more. Ask some questions, comments, let us know what we can do for you. And I promise tomorrow we'll have a lot more to talk about because it'll be the hump day edition. All right, be right back. No, we won't. Let's wrap up the show for the day. Thank goodness. Chris Alcedo coming up next. Get by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. We'll see you tomorrow. Always Sunday in the rich man's world.
Hey, y'all have a good one.
Boys, AM 700 KSEV, Tomball, Houston, the voice of Texas. KSEV 700 AM.